Hey there, and welcome to the Audrey Entrepreneur Podcast. I'm Joshua Sheehan, and this is episode 240. The Audrey Entrepreneur is a community for people who are interested in downsizing their life, creating remote income, and working from anywhere. Our goal is to support and inspire entrepreneurs in and around the RV community. Today, we have the pleasure of speaking with Dustin and Nicole Schroeder from Full Time Families. Dustin and Nicole are nomadic entrepreneurs that run multiple businesses from the road. They've traveled full time with their family of five since 2017 and are very engaged in the RV community throughout their company, Full Time Families. Full Time Families hosts over 12 events each year. In addition to providing resources for new and veteran RVers, they focus on creating connections for families to help sustain the nomadic lifestyle. Nicole is also the co-founder of the RV Family Virtual Summit, which is something we'll get into a little bit later on in the episode. We talk about their personal RV travels and how that led to becoming more involved in the RV community, and the story behind how they became the owners of the decade-old RV community, Full Time Families. Before we get into the interview, I'll say that Full Time Families runs a ton of meeting places online, specifically in the form of Facebook groups, but branching out. I want you to pick out a number in your mind as to what a, quote, ton, unquote, of Facebook groups is to you, and keep that number in the back of your mind. It's interesting to see how many folks are expanding from Facebook groups and how Full Time Families is accommodating that shift in their audience. And Nicole is able to give us a little bit insight as to how they facilitate 10 to 15 live events and so many virtual communities. As I'm sure you can guess, they don't do it alone. The Schroeders and I get to chat about major obstacles and the benefits of running a business that doesn't host their events in the same location each time. Dustin also owns a retail store in Minnesota, so we jump into a few aspects of running a Sticks and Bricks retail location as a nomad and the challenges and growth opportunities that that situation can provide. This episode is chock full of other awesome tidbits, but rather than me tell you about them, let's jump right into the episode. Hey, Dustin and Nicole, welcome to the RV Entrepreneur Podcast. Where are you guys calling from today?
We are calling from just outside of San Antonio in a Thousand Trails Park, actually, with some friends.
Nice. You guys just got back from a big trip. Can you tell everybody where you went?
We took a caravan of full-time families down to Mexico. I'm in San Felipe. And so we had 25 families rolling with us. And we met in Yuma, Arizona for 4 days to just kind of get set up. And then we took our entire convoy across the border into San Felipe, Mexico, and spent 10 days on the Sea of Cortez down there. And it was awesome.
That is super cool. That leads me into, why did you lead them? What do Dustin and Nicole do that is interesting for us to talk about today?
What do you do, Dustin?
We run Full-Time Families, which is a community-based organization for RVers that live full-time with their kids. Obviously, homeschooling and road schooling is a big part of that. Community is our main focus. So getting people together and giving them great experiences is kind of what we really want. We really want to connect people.
And so how do you guys mostly do that? Is it through online connection? Is it through physical meetups? Is it more excursion-based, actually going to in a convoy to Mexico? What's the scope of Full-Time Families? Maybe break it down percentage-wise. What do you guys focus on?
I'd say we're a really good mix of, we have a large online community. All of our members get access to a bunch of different Facebook groups that we have, and they're segregated by locations and also by interests. People can get connected with a group for road schooling, and they can ask their questions about, I have a seven-year-old, we're having this issue, or I have a seven-year-old, how can we enhance their learning in X way? We have groups for like natural nomads who are, you know, wondering how they can make a healthier life for their family while they're on the road, and IT professionals and boondockers and everything in between. So our online groups are very healthy and robust, a lot of activity there. And then we also have the regional groups where people are talking like, hey, where's the best place to go in Florida right now? Or where's a fun field trip? Or, hey, our family's lonely and we want to meet up with somebody. Is anybody in this area? And then we also try to do 10 to 15 events a year. And some of those are, like our Mexico one is, and we call that a Rome rally, and that's like our biggest rally where we actually move places and do a bigger event. And then we've also done one to Alaska. The other events are just a mixture of a family reunion, which is coming up in a few weeks in Florida. And we'll have 85 families there, which will be our biggest event that we have hosted. And then just a bunch of hangouts throughout the year too. Different events in different places. Some of them are in a bigger city where there's an attraction there and we're going there, like the Smokies. And then sometimes it's like a campground in the middle of nowhere, but we have a theme for it and we're just kind of connecting and just making sure that people are growing their community and their circle and getting that connection and that feel that they need after they launch.
I think it's hard to put a percentage based on it because I think a lot of people use the online portion of our community to connect in person. So I don't know that we can necessarily put a percentage breakdown on it because I think the goal for most people is to be able to meet in person and make that connection in person.
Sure.
But in order to do that, we have a lot of online resources, a lot of chat groups and Facebook groups. One of our big things that we just rolled out recently is our Discord. We have a server now on Discord, which helps people locate the different location groups. We have big parks like South Padre Island. We have lots of families down there all winter, so they have their own chat set up for that. Florida, people bounce around a lot in Central Florida and they're able to connect and really meet up. Other parts of Texas like Lake Conroe, Southern California and Arizona, in the winter time those are very popular areas, so they'll go to those chats and be able to link up with families that have similar interests. I don't know how to break that down percentage wise. I think they're used together.
Sure. Yeah, no, that makes sense. And being a part of full-time families myself, it is overwhelming how many different ways there are to connect. How do you guys as facilitators juggle all that? Nicole, I can just see you getting up and logging into Facebook and having messages from 15 different groups. How do you make sure that you're servicing all those different? Because it's nice that they're narrowed down because you're right, you can ask specific questions in an appropriate group. But I can imagine as an overseeing that, it's got to be a little bit overwhelming.
A rough count, we have around 30 groups on Facebook. And then Nessa mentioned that we're also on Discord because we know some people are moving away from Facebook and those other social media things. And so we just added Discord. And honestly, we have an awesome group of moderators that volunteers their time in, you know, certain interest groups or regional groups where they're located. And they really help us to just keep the conversation going and make sure that the connections are happening. And then also just to make sure that we don't want spam stuff in there. We don't want people trying to sell things. We just want it to be genuine community building, asking questions, providing resources. And our group of moderators is amazing. We could not do these connections without them. And they help us. And then if they have questions, they'll definitely send them our way and we can make some decisions if we need to. In all honesty, the members groups are amazing. And I think there's a little bit of, I might meet this family in person, so I'm going to make sure that I'm, you know, being kind and appropriate. We also do have a big group for anybody who's not a full-time family member yet. We have about 43,000 or so people in that group. A lot of people just curious about the lifestyle, wondering if this is something that they could maybe do with their family someday, just looking for some information. Or some people that are RVing with their kids and they just felt like a full-time families hasn't been a good fit for them for whatever reason at that point yet. That group's a little bit harder to manage with the number of people in there and just, like I said, some of them not being members yet. So not having that, yeah, I might meet these other people. Those groups, it's all the moderators do an amazing job and we're just so grateful for them.
Very cool. And then with 10 to 15 events a year, that's even more staggering to me than the 30 Facebook groups. Are you guys facilitating all those yourselves, or is it, again, there's going to be people that are helping facilitate those?
We have people that help us do some of the events. So I think in 2021, we did maybe half of them, and I think maybe a little more than half. But others have really hosted. I mean, we had the Chan family hosted a couple of events. They had some other co-hosts. We've had the Culpin family. They hosted some events. The Bernard family has hosted some events. The Howards and the Simpsons did the Las Vegas one. We wouldn't be able to do it by ourselves. It's a huge community, and just me and Nicole could never help facilitate all the stuff that we're able to do. It definitely is a team effort.
Well, so we took over ownership of full-time families in 2020. So we didn't have any events in 2020 once we took over. So we had kind of a year to just figure things out. So we did host the first 6 events of 2021 just ourselves, just because we wanted to make sure we were there and kind of, you know, just feel out the situation and make sure that it was going to be a good fit and campgrounds were receptive and just the change from not having events for a year. We wanted to make sure that everything was going well, and they went awesome. And then, like Dustin said, we were able to get some longtime members that were able to host, and we're so grateful for that. And they do an awesome job. We try to be at the bigger events. The family reunion, we'll have 85 families there, and so Dustin and I will be there. And then we have like the Balloon Fiesta, which is 50 families. Those two events we do every year, and so we're there, and then at a bunch of other random ones as well. But we try to be at like the cornerstone events for sure. Then the community helps us out hosting some other events too, so we can fill in that calendar and make sure that we're having events all over the country, not just in one centralized area.
The other thing is the 10 to 15 events that we host isn't really enough for the community. That's one of the challenges that we're trying to overcome now, is the community would definitely, they'd be well attended if we doubled that. If we did 30 events, I'm pretty sure they'd all fill up. To us, that's the more overwhelming. How do we expand and do more of these events to fill the need for the community? Because every event that we have has been selling out, and there's people that are upset because they can't go and can't meet new people and get involved with that community. So no matter what the event is, it seems like there's some people that weren't able to make it, and there's a number of reasons why they have limits. A lot of it is the facility, the campground, but we're trying to figure out how we can meet that need, which means we probably have to double the number of events in order to come close to meeting that need.
Right. Okay, let's step back a little bit before we dive a little more into full-time families. Tell me, when did you get on the road?
We launched in September of 2017.
Before you had full-time families, when you launched, one, what was the reason for going full-time? And two, how were you funding your travels at that point?
We didn't know we were launching. We didn't know what full-time was. So we actually, I worked a lot, and I own another business, a retail business up in Minnesota. Worked a lot. And essentially, I thought I was taking an 8 month to 8.5 month sabbatical. We left in September 2017 because that was the start of the school year, which we had already been homeschooling. Nicole was homeschooled for probably 3 or 4 years at that point. And so that part wasn't difficult, but I took a sabbatical from work, and I was going to travel for the whole school year. So from September to June. And we didn't learn about all the families that were full-time until probably halfway through that trip.
I think we actually joined full-time families in April. It's kind of funny, like I've been trying to talk him into selling our house for a long time and moving to a different area. And so finally got him to agree to it, sold the house, and we were just going to go on this 8 month trip and then build in a different area. So we just kept our camper that we had been using for weekends in Minnesota and went on this trip. We didn't know that other families were traveling at all. We thought it was a new idea, and it wasn't a lifestyle for us. It was just a trip. And so that now we joke and tell people we're on year 5 of our 8 month trip. Which I think happens to a lot of people who try to put a deadline on something, continues to grow. I think around April, because the first couple of months were really fun. It was vacation mode. We were moving every 3 or 4 days, trying to see everything that we could in every city, going out to eat and trying all the local food. It was really fun and really expensive. And then we just got worn out because we were moving so fast and we didn't meet any people because, you know, we were never in the campground because we were out exploring every day that we were there. And we had eventually found full-time families as a way to build community on the road and joined, even though we were actually planning on going back to Minnesota that summer and staying there.
So then what happened?
So we extended for about 5 weeks, and then we went back to Minnesota, and we never looked at land for our new house that we were going to build. And then there actually was an event that came up in Michigan, and we were in Minnesota. And so I begged Dustin to let us go. It was bad timing for an event that he had to do in Minnesota for his business. He finally gave in and we went. And it was just great to see all of the families that are actually doing this full time. We had read about them now for a couple of months and connected online a little bit. But just to actually see families doing, like living this lifestyle, was an eye opener for us. They were just so welcoming. And then our kids made friends there, and they were, you know, outside playing sun up to sundown. And our teens especially had made connections, and they were just doing campfires and learning how to play the guitar. And We had Kids Marketplace, and I had 3 or 4 teen boys in here trying to figure out how to make lemon bars so they could sell something at the marketplace. Dustin and I really just thought, like, hey, this is really, you know, what we want for our kids, for them to be able to have these experiences and these connections. And so they said, I guess we can travel more if we can be with our friends. And we realized that it was going to get cold in Minnesota pretty soon. So we left again in September. And I think at that point, we just decided Minnesota wasn't really feeling like home for us after a while. So we have family there that we love and we visit, but we don't feel called to go and live full time in Minnesota anymore.
I usually tell people our first lap around the country, our first that 8-9 month trip, that was more about seeing things. But really, ever since then, it's been more about people. We don't care so much where we're at. We just want to be with friends. The destination isn't as important as who we're with.
So you became members of Full Time Families. And talk to me a little bit about how you got into becoming owners in Full Time Families.
It happened kind of a roundabout way. So we actually were in a caravan to Alaska with the full-time families in 2019. And so we were with the owners at the time were Dustin and Jill Dinkins. And so we were on a trip with them. Myself and one other mom were planning the stops for the trip and kind of being the host for the trip. And so I was involved in talking to Jill a lot. And actually somebody had messaged me saying, did you know that the Dinkins were maybe thinking of getting partners or selling? And I said, no, that had never came up. But when we were in Alaska one day, the moms were out sitting and I just casually asked the question and she said, yeah, because it's a lot. It's like you're alluding to, like all the Facebook groups and the events and just managing that whole community is a lot. And they also have some other projects going on. And so it was a very quick conversation. Yeah, we're interested. And then, okay. And then we started talking about other things. And a few weeks later, I'd asked Dustin if he had known that they were interested, and he said no. And we didn't really think about it very much. So a few weeks later, he decided to reach out. And so it was kind of a slow process of what this would look like. Thinking back at it, we were looking for something else to expand. We think diversifying is very important. And so we were looking for different projects to do. But I think in our mind, or at least my mind, when you're an entrepreneur, you always start something. You start your own something. And we hadn't found that something yet. And actually, we had been to the RVE Summit, must have been the fall before that. And I listened to one of the talks about somebody buying a business. Some of the tech people had just bought a business. And I thought, oh, that's interesting. I had never actually thought about, hey, we could actually buy a business as our next project. And so it kind of just slowly turned into that. And the Dinkins had actually left Alaska before we even had our first real conversation about becoming involved. We were partners for 9 months.
Almost a year, yeah.
9 months to a year, we were partners with them and then ended up purchasing the entire company in 2020.
So what has been the hardest part about taking over an established business?
That's a tough question. It's actually a really good question. I mean, there's obstacles in every business, whether you start it from the ground or you take it over. I guess one of the things that makes it a little bit harder when you're taking it over is there are procedures and there's policies that the business has already made those decisions. And you can't necessarily change everything about it because that would change the whole business. There are some things that make that a challenge. If it's something that you think you could have done a different way, and you also got to remember, if you're taking over a business that's established, when that policy was put in place, the business probably looked a lot different. Full-time Families, for example, is 10 years old. Some of the decisions that kind of built that core of that business were made back when there was only 50 members. So we have a bunch of charter members, I think 50 charter members, where they have a whole separate membership than some of the members that are joining today. That sometimes makes it a little bit of a challenge when you're making decisions on things, because some members have different perks in their membership than others. Mm-hmm. But it would have been impossible for the people to decide when there's only 50 members what was going to be a good decision for something that's now we're over 4,500 members or something.
Whoa.
So it's scaled a lot. I guess those are some things that sometimes are a bit of a challenge taking over an already established business.
People, I think, is hard too, in the way that some people just, I think, work better with other personalities. And so like having to do a little bit of changing in contractors was hard. I think expectations of some people just don't really like change that much. And even just members, it used to be like this and we liked it like that kind of mentality.
Right.
And we've had to grow and change. And we've also had some new ideas that we wanted to implement that have changed, you know, some of the ways that other things have been going. I think change is kind of another.
I'm going to probe you a little bit, Nicole. Can you provide me an example of that? Something that you're wanting to grow into and is having pushback.
So I think events is one of those things where events looked a lot different when the entire membership was 50 members and they're maybe scattered across the country or, you know, so most members are coming in. The events were a lot smaller and they cost less, quite frankly. But now like costs have gone up now that we're so big with so many members. First of all, doing an event for 10 families is really hard because our membership number is nearing 4,500. And we probably have maybe 2,500 that are actually active families traveling right now. And to try to service all of those families and get them to events, if they're interested, doing 10 families at a time just really isn't feasible.
Sure.
A lot of the events have gotten bigger and obviously we've tried to do more events and do a variety. So we have had a couple that were 15 families in 2021. And then family reunion obviously used to be, you know, like 25 families. And now it's going to be 85 families. And so some of them have just gotten bigger. And I think it does make it a different feel. It's more intimate and easier connect with 15 families than it is with 85. But it's just kind of a direction that we have to go, I think, for some things in order to service the community better as a whole.
Sure. And I think the community as a whole is growing itself. So it would make sense that your membership would swell as well.
And I think the feedback on events 25 to 40 is when the feedback is the strongest. If we have more than 40, people feel like they didn't get to meet everyone or they didn't get to connect real close to a handful of people or they only got to connect real close with a handful of people. Where if it's less than 25, it's just hard to make that a practical event. The amount of work that goes into organizing an event isn't any different whether you have 10 or 25 people. So I think 25 to 40 is.
Yeah, that's where we like to be now. So it used to be probably 10 to 15 was normal. Now we try to do a lot of our events 25 to 40, but the family reunion is what it is, right? The family is growing, so the party's growing. I think just setting expectations up front, people know how many tickets we sold so they can see and kind of make that decision for themselves. I understand that it can be overwhelming to have a larger number of families, but I think just setting good expectations up front too has a lot to do with it. So we'll see how it goes. And you're going to be joining us, right?
Yep, we'll be there. I'm excited. Awesome. The boys are looking forward to it. What has been the biggest challenge for you guys running this business and also a remote business with a retail location in Minnesota from the road?
For me, it's the website. I do not have a web background, so we have contractors that help us with the actual website, and the technology part of that is not either of our strengths. Nicole's actually getting a lot better at, like, she can get in there and do a lot of things on the website, so she's learning a lot of it. But for me, that would be the hardest part, was essentially it's a web-based business, and we don't know how to run a website, at least when we bought it. So learning that has been probably the hardest part for me.
I would say the hardest part for you is not being able to show up when there's a problem.
Like physically?
Like when we were in Minnesota, Dustin was very hands-on. So if there's a problem, he's okay, I have to go to work now and then go. I mean, that's, running remote is tricky. And like if we have an event or we have an area where there's a bunch of families, we don't have a way to get there. Sometimes just figuring things out with a group of people, not being in person can be tricky, I think, for me. And I think sometimes when you're communicating and you can't see people's faces, or you're just going through text or chat, sometimes is what people prefer. And I think sometimes maybe like your tone or your message gets lost a little bit. And so sometimes I would prefer to be able to have that in person conversation or connection or explanation. And so for me, I think not having that ability, because when we were in Minnesota, like I said, Dustin has retail stores. If there was an issue, we could just go in and just fix it. And now we could be on the opposite side of the country as something and just have to figure it out online or through chat. And that can be tricky sometimes.
What is the best part about working from the road for you guys?
for me, I think the best part of working from the road is that we get to move. We get to see different things. We get to be with our friends, different friends. We get to meet new people. The constant change, but also you can keep your familiar with you at the same time.
For me, it was seeing my team back in Minnesota really step up. When I was in Minnesota, I was involved in everything. Probably looking back, almost micromanaging everybody. When I left, I spent some time pretty much giving them a lot of rein so they could make decisions, they could do things on their own. And I feel like watching their confidence grow. And I mean, I have an awesome team. We wouldn't be able to travel like we do if I didn't. So watching my employees really take ownership and conquer everything that needs to be conquered, that's been probably my favorite part of working remotely. Now I'm more or less on call. So if something happens, they need my help, they'll call me. And I manage the relationship with our vendors is pretty much my sole job in that business. I haven't sold a product or I haven't worked with a customer in a long time there. My team takes care of all of that.
Very cool. Being that you do have experience growing stores and teams, what is the outlook for full-time families? Are you guys going to grow the team and be able to then provide more of the events and things that the community's begging for?
Yeah, we're definitely just trying to figure out like right fit and kind of make roles a little bit more defined. But we definitely do need to grow a team, add a few more people. And like I said, the membership is growing very quickly. I think this was kind of accelerated in the last couple of years, people working, you know, remote and kids doing online learning. I think people really realized that this could really be an option for our family, people that didn't think that it could be before. The community is really growing. And honestly, like the team is one of the most important things about any remote business, in my opinion. I think we've said it multiple times in every business that we've talked about. Like we couldn't do what we're doing without the people that we have that are working with us to grow and in some ways be the face of the business and wherever, you know, whatever area we're in, whether people are hosting an event for us, they're the face of full-time families that week, or our moderators who are the ones that are being seen online a lot, and just having those people be the face of our business. Yeah, we couldn't do it without them. So team is very important to us.
So at the moment, are you guys the only full-time paid positions with full-time families?
We have multiple contractors that are working in different areas. We have somebody that works on a website. We have somebody that works in design. We have a community coordinator who also is helping with events right now. And then like we have an overall moderator position who just like keeps track of all the moderators and helps out if they need anything, and then kind of the catch-all.
Being that in-person events are a big portion of the full-time family's mission, what are some of the back end things from a business owner standpoint that someone who does not own a event-based business might not think about? So I'm thinking insurance, locations. What are some of the roadblocks and or the things you had to learn to start doing events with a large number of families and not necessarily having it? Like it'd be really easy if full-time families could buy a campground, right, and just have all their events there. But that wouldn't service the mission because then it'd always be in the same spot. So I understand that that wouldn't work. What are some of the struggles that you guys go through in setting up your events from the business standpoint?
So insurance is a huge one. That's actually probably one of our biggest costs in every event is liability insurance. And there's flat out some states that they won't even cover. So there's some states we can't have events in.
And are those policies for each individual event?
So we get a policies for each event that covers the length of the event. And then we have insurance for the overall business as well.
Got it.
Yeah. So we have a general liability policy, which really will only cover us because right now we're still Minnesota based. So our general liability only covers Minnesota events. Mm-hmm. So any other state, we have to check with them to see if we can add a special event policy to that one. In most cases where we've had events, the answer is no. So we have to go out and buy a special event policy. There's been a couple events that we've had in the works where they've told us, nope, we won't insure in that state or that area. then we have to look for a different venue, which I think is another logistical challenge, is finding the campground or the spot or the venue. That can be a big deal too. It's gotten a little bit easier since we've learned before COVID, a lot of the events, we had an indoor space in case the weather was bad or whatever. We're learning that that indoor space isn't as critical as what we once thought it was.
Okay.
So that opens up a little bit.
I mean, it's desirable, but I think that we've just been so lucky with the weather. So far, the last year, it's been good. Right. And we've been able to make it work with very few changes. And that's been really nice. But yeah, definitely like campground space is hard. And I think it's logistics of the campground too. There's different people working. So you might talk to one person and then somebody else has a different answer, or things just aren't the way that you were told they were going to be. You know, we've been told that we were going to have space and we showed up that we didn't have, or we've been told that certain things were going to be included or open as far as amenities, and we've gotten there and that's not been true. So it's just, it's hard. And I think just setting expectations with the families up front, hey, this may or may not be, and we try not to make any guarantees on anything campground related, because we could connect with the campground every single week for a year and think that everything is solid and then show up and something's different, and it's really out of our control.
So I listened to the podcast where you were talking with Heath, and he had said that no matter how much time and energy you spend with the facility, you can tell them a bunch of times over and over that we're going on sale this day, you're going to get all these calls. I 100% have had the same experience Heath did, because the campground's never prepared. We always make sure that they'll accept packages. Full-timers have a lot of packages when they can get them. And right. We've had that really overwhelm campgrounds because we're like, hey, we got 40 sites. Is it okay if we get packages? And I think they're thinking, okay, there'll be a few, maybe 40 packages. No, it's like 20 per family. Like,
yeah, definitely. So, I can see that being an unintended consequence of having not just campers there, but full-time families that are getting mail delivered. Yeah. How far out in advance are you finding that you need to talk with venues in order to secure 25 to 40 sites?
We probably need 6 to 9 months in most areas. But I mean, it also depends on the area and how many we're trying to get to.
Sure.
If we can be flexible and do like boondocking or something, or a county fairground, we can kind of do those in shorter spurts because they're not as popular. But if you're looking for a place with amenities, or if we're trying to book Minnesota in the summer, we definitely need extra lead time.
So obviously campgrounds, their main income revenue is having people come stay at their park. It seems like the more people who are getting on the road and traveling, the more that events are starting to happen at campgrounds. Have you run into any campgrounds that are starting to have events coordinators, someone that you guys can connect with as hosting an event, that they're going to be the liaison to the whole campground so that you don't get those, I ask Joe, he says one thing, I ask Brittany, she says another. Have you found any campgrounds having event liaisons?
We have run into that, and it definitely helps. It does make things a little bit easier.
So very nice to have that. Super efficient. It does cut down on the, like, you know, I thought this, but this is what's really happening. But then the other thing that we do need to worry about with that is then the cost. So we also want our events to be affordable. And the campground cost is always the highest cost for the stay. But if they have a position like that, they're probably charging a higher nightly rate. And so we do try to balance that cost, and sometimes we need it, or it's in an area where it just works best, and you know, it's better for us to try to go through the smaller family campground and maybe even just take over most of the campground for that week. I mean, it's a balancing act. I wish they all had it, but they didn't have to charge a ton. But the reality is they have it because they host a lot of events, and they probably have a lot of amenities, and that's why the cost is higher.
Sure.
Just like with the events, everything's got to be somewhat flexible too. Like, we had one event, we had to move in the middle of the event because the campground we were at got flooded. And Nicole, miraculously in Pigeon Forge, Tennessee, where we got flooded out of our campground, she was able to find another campground that could fit 30 some RVs. We moved from one campground to another in Pigeon Forge in the spring during their prime season. Luckily, there was a brand new campground that had just opened a few weeks before, so they had enough empty spaces. But the flexibility is also a factor.
Yeah, that was just pure answer to prayer as well. But yeah, ended up having one of our events get flooded, which is extremely stressful. Yeah. When everyone has their home and their family with them and you need to evacuate a campground because you might lose your home. But yeah, we were able to find a place. I think I was just shocked because we had found a place called probably like 15, 20 other places that were like, we can give you two or three sites. And so at that point, dissolved the event because we can't, we have like 15 different campgrounds we're all going to at that point. So we found this one. And then he said, yeah, I have room for your whole group. And I'm like, what? I have 30.
That's 30, like, yeah, sir. Yeah.
And he's like, I'm like, oh my gosh. Okay. Thank you so much. And then I was like, wait, how big are the sites? Because in my mind, I'm like, oh my gosh, you're probably saying he has 30 sites, right? And then half of them are 20 foot or something,
right?
Tent spots or something. And then he said, oh, we have, they're all 70 foot pull throughs. And I was like, I almost started crying at that point because I'm like, I can't even believe that we can move our entire event.
Yeah.
No problem. Everybody just pulls in. And so they were so grateful.
Well, and the best part was Nicole also convinced them to do it for the same rate we were paying at the other campground.
Yeah. So the campground we were at said, we'll refund you. And the other campground said, just let us know how much you paid and we'll charge you the same amount. Yeah, it was awesome. And this was Pigeon Forge Landing.
Yep. So it's now our go-to location. Anytime we're in Pigeon Forge in our RV, that's where it's probably the campground we've been to the most times, quantity times.
Well, that's what I was going to ask. Like, did this spur a relationship with this campground that you now can do future things there because you brought in a bunch of business and right when they started off?
Yeah, they were grateful and we were so grateful and it worked out awesome.
Now
yeah,
they're busy like every other place in Pigeon Forge.
Right, right.
Now they're busy, so I don't think that would happen again this year. Like I said, complete answer to prayer. But yeah, they were awesome. And I think now it also helped us to become more mindful. Like, okay, we might need to have a little bit of a backup plan. Mm-hmm. And obviously, you're not going to be able to, in Madison, we can't say, okay, this other campground is going to have 85 sites. So if we have to move there, then it'll be fine. In the back of our head, what is this going to look like? And hopefully being less stressed out.
Yeah. The RV Family Summit. What is that?
So the RV Family Summit, we did our first one last year. What it is an online summit just directly targeted toward families only. So there's a ton of online summits you can do for working on the road or just becoming an RVer in general or any amount of other topics. But we hadn't found one that targeted families specifically, which I think is a whole different niche than, you know, all of the other things. There's different logistics when you're traveling with your family, you know, like routines and bedtimes and road schooling and what are the laws for this and what if we need to see a doctor and how do my kids make friends so that I can make friends or just a whole different thing, different topics that nobody was addressing. You know, they're addressing like how you work in your rig, but how do you work in your rig when you have three kids that are running around making noise? Just a lot of questions, I think, specific to families that we found weren't being answered. So we actually started last year in Brianna Royal with Crazy Family Adventure. It was actually her idea and she came to me with it, which was awesome. And then also Sheree Collier from Live Camp Work. So it was the three of us that hosted the summit last year, which was all online for 5 days. And it was just an awesome event. And we got a ton of great feedback on it. People were asking, how often are you going to do this event? And we'd love to attend again. And the answer is this year in May, we're going to have our second event. And this time we're also adding some in-person options. So we have a campground in California, a campground in Texas, and a campground in North Carolina that we're going to be live streaming at. So people can get the ticket and attend the live stream. And then also we're going to have activities for the families. So it'll kind of be like a full-time families hangout mix with this live event. We really just wanted to bring information strictly to families that was very specific to their needs. It was born out of that and it keeps growing. Hosting an online summit was something totally out of my wheelhouse. But Sheree, she hosts a lot of online summits every year. And so she was awesome with the back end and teaching us about what we should be doing. And so definitely a learning process.
I'm excited to see how this next one comes, the blended in-person and online. I'm sure it's going to be a great experience for the attendees. I'm curious to hear from you guys how it goes from the back end, if you're just going to be losing your mind trying to cover all these bases or how that goes. I'm sure a blended event has been and will be well received because it gives people the opportunity to participate at their comfort level.
You can see the session and then you're with people that have just saw the session with you. And so you can have that conversation still and continue on and the kids can play. And then we have the blended events, and then we also do, we still will have the option to just do online as well.
So, right.
Yeah, we're excited about it.
That's actually an awesome event for people that are in the planning stages too, the ones that have not launched yet. Maybe they haven't even bought their RV yet, but they're dreaming about this. And that's unique. Like a lot of our events, people already have their RV. They're coming and they're setting up and they're meeting with a bunch of people. Where this event, being online and being very educational, it's great for the people that are in the planning process that haven't bought their RV but would love to do full-time travel.
Right.
Yeah, it helps us really expand who's getting the resources, because like Dustin said, everybody who's going to an actual event like has their RV already. They might have just launched and have a lot of questions still, but you know, they've already put some things into motion. Mm-hmm. And so the Family Summit does cover the whole gamut of early stage things, like you might not even be on the road yet, or maybe even just planning an extended road trip. Okay, we're planning on going for, maybe somebody will be silly enough to think they're only on an 8-month trip like we were in 5 years, they'll still be going. And then also have a lot of content for people who have been doing this for years. We're in year 5 and there's still things that we're learning. You know, people are like, hey, did you know that you could do this? And we're like, what? You know, like something so simple is like totally life-changing sometimes in the RV world. And yeah, we're really able to cover a lot of topics in that session.
Very cool.
We're 5 years in, and 3 days ago we had 2 bad tires on our trailer. We only carry 1 spare, so that was a learning curve.
Yeah. So what is the future of full-time families? Where do you see it going?
We've seen a lot of growth, and I think there's a lot of growth coming. And we, I think, really just want to focus on offering more opportunities for connection. We don't want it to feel so big to people that they feel like they're losing the opportunity to have those connections. We've met some of our best friends on the road, and we want people to be able to have that opportunity too, if they're open to it. And then also, I think, just expanding resources. We want to expand a lot of resources in our road schooling area and give more opportunity for education and really enriching those learning experiences.
Another thing that the community is really looking for, and we haven't figured out the logistics yet, but we get asked all the time about the campground. Like, some people want to be able to go and grow a garden. Some people want to have more of the longer term community. Instead of a week or 2 weeks, they want to spend 3 months together. That gets brought up pretty much at every single branch fire that we've had in the last 6-7, actually probably the whole year.
That sounds like a whole ball of yarn.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, we've looked at properties and we've written down some things that have been brought to us, like, hey, this would be really nice. But logistically, that's a lot harder than just pulling the trigger and getting it done.
Sure.
Definitely more of a longer term project, but something that we would like to offer the community at some point.
So it seems like full-time families, there's a lot of future work. You're planning for events and things in the future, and there's a lot of day-to-day work managing the community. As far as full-time family goes, from your perspective as the owners, what does a successful day or a successful month look like?
We just had our Mexico Rome rally with 25 families, and 7 families went down further south into the Baja. And on the way back, there was 2 families traveling, just the 2 of them. One of them broke down in Mexico, and it took over a week to get it fixed. And the second family that was just convoying back to the U.S. with them stayed with them for the whole week. It's the support of others in the community. And you hear these stories. If you go into the full-time families groups, you're going to hear these stories almost daily. It's stuff like that that I think makes the success. It's not the business side of it. It's the community side of it, I think, that makes us feel more success.
Yeah, just growing the community, providing opportunities for people to grow together and make relationships. And again, like, Mexico's fresh just because we just got back from there. But I happened to walk up to 2 families. Or we were doing a minute to win it game on one of the last days, actually, and they were having a great time together. And I said, did you guys know each other before this event? Because they seemed like they had been friends for years. Mm-hmm. And they're like, no, we just met in Yuma 10 days ago. I guess providing the space, creating the space for people to have those connections and really kind of foster that community. When we hear people connecting or people going out of their way for another family or reaching out and making sure people are okay, to us, that's what the success of full-time families is. It's the community members giving to each other and giving back and just being there for each other.
It makes sense because in our own travels, we spent 28 days down in Mexico with two other families. In those 28 days, we didn't really know either of them super well before that. I mean, we knew them both, but that 28-day trip, I would say, is equal to a two-year relationship in sticks and bricks because we're spending all day together. And there's times we're at a fire till 2 a.m. sitting outside with them. And oftentimes we're out cooking breakfast together. We're our old life. Our close friends, we were lucky if we got to hang out with them one night a week or right. one night a month. Maybe we went out to dinner or went out for a drink or went bowling or whatever. But it was very rare. So a 28-day, you're with them all the time. I mean, that's why those relationships grow so fast, in my opinion.
Yeah, definitely. And being a full-time families member myself, we've definitely gained value from the community that it creates and that you guys are providing that value. So I think you are succeeding and I'm very excited to see how it continues to grow in the future. I had heard about full-time families before I knew what full-time families was. The first time I actually knew that it was an entity separate than just a Facebook group is actually when I had seen the pizza party invite at the RVE Summit. And then so I came up and I talked to you, Nicole, about it. If someone wants to learn more about full-time families, where's the best place that they can go to do that?
Probably two good places for information are either our big Facebook group, which is just full-time families. On Facebook, there's like 43,000 plus people in there. Otherwise, our website has a lot of information as well, www.fulltimefamilies.com. If you have any questions, there's ways to contact us on there. Please reach out. The community aspect is what's most important to us. And so we want people to be connected and feel connected if that's what they're looking for. So we definitely want to help everyone to fill that need.
And I would add Discord. Discord is our newest project. We've been asked a lot because there's a lot of people that aren't on Facebook, but they still want the benefit. For a long time, we've been asked, hey, give us a second way to communicate. Discord is our attempt at that. Now we have both Facebook and Discord. Some people don't like Discord. Great. There's Facebook. Some people don't like Facebook. Great. There's Discord.
Perfect. Well, I will put all of those in the show notes as well. So if you guys are interested in checking out full-time families, you can go connect with Dustin and Nicole. And thank you both for taking the time out of your day to be here with me.
No, thank you. Thank you for setting this up. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.
Full-time families is booming. Close to 4,500 members and growing each day. What a cool problem to have. And I'm excited to see how the Schroeders expand their team to serve the community in the most beneficial way. It's a tough spot, right? Obviously, 15 to 40 families is their sweet spot for events, but like Dustin said, they could easily fill 30 events a year and still not meet the demand. I enjoyed hearing how buying an established RV-based business happened for the Schroeders, and it's a good insight for all of us entrepreneurs. We don't always have to start from ground zero. There are opportunities and reasons to purchase an already established business. Jumping back to the Facebook groups, what was your number? How many Facebook groups did you think that they ran? Was it more or less than 30? That just blows my mind. I'm in a ton of those groups, and they're well-run and active too. They're not just dead groups that don't get used. Having only run full-time families for a few years, it's awesome to hear how Dustin and Nicole, that their conviction is so strong in growing the community within the RV sphere and providing opportunities for folks to connect online and in real life. If you're a full-time family on the road or soon to be on the road, I highly suggest that you look more into full-time families. I've personally benefited from this organization, and they're making great strides towards the ever-moving target of connecting RV families on the road. If you enjoyed this episode, please take a moment to head over to Full-Time Families on one of their social media accounts or send them an email from their website and say hello. They're super awesome folks, and I'm personally excited to hang out with them more in the future. That's all for today. I'll see you guys in the next one.